The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
If you thought 2016 was important, 2020 is going to be the greatest, most significant election of your lifetime. As a result, we've created a unique additional podcast with our regular guest in studio, former special assistant to President Trump, Boris Epstein. It's called The Battle for 1600. Join us today by subscribing to the podcast for free. Just look for my name, Boris Epstein, and the battle for 1600. Welcome to GunBroker.com Second Amendment Friday. We're so excited with our partnership with my favorite gun site on the planet. GunBroker.com makes it so easy to visit one page and buy all the guns and accessories you need, including ammunition. If you're a gun enthusiast, bookmark their page. If you're a sportsman, a hunter, bookmark their page and visit it at least once a day like I do. Or a little bit more often. Right now, I've got my eyes on a Spaz 12. Do you know what a Spaz 12 is? Well, you do if you watch Hollywood movies like The Hitcher and Terminator, a classic shotgun from the 80s. We'll see how high the bids go. I'm so excited to have our GunBroker.com partnership as our sponsor moment for this segment every Friday. Celebrate the Second Amendment with me by going to GunBroker.com right now and discovering the perfect deal for you. I'm Sebastian Gorka. This is America First. Let's get back to the show with Trish Regan.
Great to be here today with all of you in for my good friend, Dr. G. And you know what? We saw quite a debate there last night, didn't we? Live from Tennessee. You know, the president has been under a lot of fire, of course, before all of this, before the debate even started, because of coronavirus. And it's constant, and the attacks have been nonstop, really, really and truly nonstop. And don't forget, I mean, I remember back in February when he, you know, was looking at, and by the way, on my program, we were encouraging the shutting down of China as well as Europe, because we were trying to prevent, of course, this from spreading throughout the U.S. And sure enough, the president did it, right? But what did you see? All the accusations of xenophobia. I mean, this is a guy who cannot win. And I have said from the beginning, and I stand by this, that coronavirus has been politicized in a really dangerous way. Anyway, my next guest is working overtime right now around the clock to ensure, however he can, that we are able to provide a vaccine to as many people possible as cheaply as possible. He is the CEO of a company called Dyadic, and they have some rather revolutionary technology that they've been using, which enables them to create much larger batches of this stuff much more cheaply. He joins me now by phone, Mark Emalfarb. Good to have you here, sir. Mark, welcome.
Thanks, Trish. Good to be here.
Now, you and I have been talking throughout all of this. Before we get into how we provide this stuff on a mass scale, which is what you're working on, give me your sense of your thoughts in terms of how the president is doing thus far. Let's take out all the noise, right, from the mainstream media. Given, you know, your background in this space, how do you think he's responding?
Well, I think prior to the pandemic, if you remember, you know, the prior administration failed to put in place and implement an effective plan to prepare for potential pandemics. And after the swine flu outbreak, there was no excuse for governmental inaction. And after taking office, President Trump and the administration recognized there was a problem, and they tried to fix it. They put in place a program to improve current manufacturing processes. And the recognition of that problem, the pandemic potential, that it could cause large-scale illness and death and damage to the economy, mm-hmm. disrupt our lives as we know it. The president and the administration put in place on September 19, 2019, if you recall, an executive order mm-hmm. that told the agencies
where they directed government agencies, right, to say, hey, guys, you know what? You got to get with the program. You got to modernize the vaccine manufacturing processes. And this was actually pretty revolutionary at the time because we had never seen anything like that.
So he was ahead of the curve. He was really mm-hmm. telling them and directing them to take action to make faster and more scalable manufacturing platforms. And it says right in the executive order, based on cell lines and systems that increased the yield of cell-based and recombinant vaccine processes. So he was really, he recognized there was a problem and he was trying to fix it.
Let me ask you this, in terms of where we are right now, everybody's saying, oh, end of November, we'll probably have a vaccine. Do you believe we will?
Well, I think we will have a vaccine. The question is, you know, what's the efficacy of it? What's the amounts, the quantities, the cost? I mean, you know, it did cost $10 billion for what speed in the government. And I don't think anybody else would have put that program together that quickly and that fast. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we were working on this since 2015 with the Europeans and the Israelis since 2018 to further develop our technology to facilitate a fast, coordinated, practical response to new infectious diseases as soon as they emerge. So we were prepared for this. And I think the issue really here is that we need to use faster, quicker, more efficient ways to sort of meet the needs of our country and the world at large. And I think mm-hmm. that
and that's where you guys come in. You know, I just want to sort of back up and explain to the listeners right now. Dyadic, basically, you guys, I like to think of it like this, like somebody's got the recipe, right, for this vaccine. And then you kind of you take that recipe and you put it in your mixing bowl, which is proprietary to you. And because of the conditions of that mixing bowl, you're able to kind of stir this thing up and make it in very, very large batches that are significantly more than you see in the traditional industry, right? Right now, many, many more batches that are being done with higher efficacy rate and more cheaply.
Yes, and we could rapidly mass produce vaccines and antibodies in substantially larger quantities at much lower cost at flexible commercial scale than anybody on the planet. And it came from a 25-year sort of journey in the industrial biotech space where we've applied the power of mass production with synthetic biology to make faster, more efficient cell lines to meet these needs.
Do you think that the administration will take this in that direction, or are they going to play it safe and, you know, go with sort of the traditional manufacturing process once it's out? I mean, it may be sort of in batches, right? You may be looking at sort of a more traditional approach, whereas then they might migrate to something like what you guys are doing down the road.
Yeah, well, I think the issue is, you know, you're going to have a prime, which is the initial shot, and then I don't think any of these vaccines are going to be one shot, and you're going to need a boost. And as you know, they've been talking about these antibodies, how long they're going to last. Nobody knows yet. So, you know, the adoption and use of a faster, more efficient cell line is not only going to help in the pandemic today, but prepare for the ones for tomorrow. And, of course, fulfill the administration's goals of lowering the cost of prescription drugs, such as insulin and cancer treatments and other biological-based vaccines and drugs, to make healthcare more accessible and affordable to the Americans and the global population. So I think it's all coming to be. I think we all recognize the need. The pandemic sort of changed everything. Everybody realizes the inefficiencies of the processes. And the president's executive order back in 2019 highlighted that inefficiency.
Yeah, no, he was ahead of the curve, for sure. I mean, he was looking at the science before anybody even knew that something like this would be so desperately needed. Anyway, Mark Emalfarb, CEO of Dyadic, who, like I said, is working around the clock to try and do what he can to try and bring this vaccine to as many people as possible, as cheaply and safely as possible. Mark, thank you for all your hard work on this. We appreciate it.
Trish, thank you for your concern and your compassion for humankind. Thanks.
Thank you, sir. Okay, we got a lot more coming up. James Carafano is going to be joining us from the Heritage Foundation. KT McFarland is going to join us to talk about Iran. Did you see this story? Apparently Iran is trying to pretend or pose possibly as the Proud Boys organization to try and influence the news cycle, to try and scare people, etc. They've allegedly, per our intelligence department, broken into broken into databases, voter registration databases here in the United States. And so that's pretty alarming. Don't forget, you know, Iran has every reason to want to see Joe Biden there. Don't forget the Obama deal, the Iran deal. That was part of the Biden administration, right? So what happens to the regime if Donald Trump gets another 4 years? My sources there in Iran that are close to the regime, they don't want Donald Trump. They've made that very, very clear. They're really hoping that it is Joe Biden. But what does that do? I mean, when you look right now, let's see if we can go to this sound if we have a minute. Let's go to cut 15. We got a big deal happening between Israel and Sudan right now.
Do you think Sleepy Joe could have made this deal, baby? Sleepy Joe. I think, do you think he would have made this deal somehow? I don't think so.
Well, Mr. President, one thing I can tell you is we appreciate the help for peace from anyone in America, and we appreciate what you've done enormously.
He's referring, of course, to the deal that's being struck between Israel and Sudan that the U.S. had a big hand in. Don't forget, this administration has also done a deal between Israel and Bahrain, as well as Israel and the UAE. So they are closing in on Iran in a really massive and really, really important way. So that's exciting on the international front. And of course, it makes sense, right? It makes sense that Iran does not want to see Donald Trump get another 4 years. Anyway, we're going to continue our conversation here with Katie McFarland, James Carafano, all coming up. This is Trish Regan from TrishIntel.com. Make sure you download the podcast, you go to the website, you sign up for my emails. Freedom is on the line.
Portions of America First are brought to you by GunBroker.com.
Their parents were with them. They got separated from their parents. And it makes us a laughingstock and violates every notion of who we are as a nation.
Let me ask you a follow-up question.
Kristen, they did it. We changed the policy.
Your response
they
to that?
They did it. We changed.
Did not.
They built the cages. Who built the cages,
let's,
Joe?
Let's talk about what
who built the cages,
about.
Joe?
Who built the cages? That came up. It was a big part of the conversation there last night as we got into the topic of immigration on stage in Tennessee. I am Trish Regan, everyone. I am here for Sebastian Gorka today. Trish Regan, the host of The Trish Regan Show and TrishIntel.com. I am so happy to be joined by my friend James Carafano from Heritage, who is in the studio there in D.C. in Seb's spot. Hey, good to see you, James.
What an upgrade, both in my seat and my host.
We won't tell him that. He's having a big birthday celebration.
Oh, that's
so
awesome. That
very exciting day.
I am so jazzed to be with you. I love your show and what you do. You're so awesome. I'm a lucky
guy. You are so kind to say that. Thank you very, very, very much. So I want your sense of what happened there on stage last night, and specifically as it relates to a topic that I know you have some thoughts on, amnesty.
So we have to start with the amnesty thing. So what going on a national debate stage and saying, let's give amnesty to everybody. Let me tell you what that is. That is an advertisement for every cartel in Latin America, because virtually all the illegal border crossing on the southern border is controlled by the cartels. This is a recruiting tool for them. They will, thousands of people will spend many tens of millions of dollars to get thrown at the border on the promise that they too might get amnesty. And it's, first of all, it's not just you're essentially pimping money for the cartels, but you're putting all these people at risk. Illegal border crossing is so dangerous. Rape, extortion, disease. I mean, there are so many ways people can get hurt and die. It's the most abominable crime.
But nobody talks about that.
No.
Right? I mean, they just say, oh, you know, you're being so mean if you don't let everybody in.
And then, and on top of that, when the Border Patrol has to try to round up all these people at the border, the drugs flow through. We're in the middle of an opioid crisis, and they'll make even more money off of that. And And then nobody talks about the number of people that you will legalize and the cost of that, which is in the many trillions of dollars. So here we are. We're running a massive deficit. We're dealing with a plague. We have massive unemployment. And you're going to take trillions of dollars to pay people to come here illegally and enrich criminal cartels that are destroying our country.
The incentives, they make absolutely no sense. And by the way, historically, the Democrats did not always feel this way. It's just more so lately, perhaps because of Donald Trump. But I mean, let's go back. I mean, you can go back over the years. I mean, quite recently, even Barack Obama, right, was saying, you know, there's legal immigration and there's illegal immigration, and we need to stand for legal immigration, not illegal.
For 20 years, every Congress has rejected an amnesty bill. Reflecting back on when we did this in the 1980s and we gave amnesty, first of all, three times the number of people showed up that we thought, because a lot of them came afterwards. And in the years after that, the number of illegal people quadrupled. Yeah. Amnesty just attracts more illegal border crossing, and it just makes everybody more at risk.
You know what I think is really fascinating is when you look at the effect on wages, too, right? It has sort of a suppression effect, does it not, on wages for actual U.S. citizens when you have that many illegals? And specifically, by the way, for some of the more recent immigrants, right? Within the immigrant communities themselves, it hurts wages.
And what they will say was, oh, look, it'll be a net positive. These people will pay more back in taxes. And the reality is it'll cost us many trillions of dollars to absorb a population which won't pay for itself. That's just a fact. And the notion that somehow the one thing that's indisputable about the last 4 years is we have done better on border security and better on immigration. And to see discussions last night about what this administration has done wrong, when the reality is everything bad at the border was because of 8 years under the previous administration. The reason why you had to build cages, the reason why you had to deal with all this stuff is because they created incentives for human traffickers to throw people across the border. And the reason why they can't unite these kids with their parents, that we've stopped pretty much all that. These are the left. Yeah. These are the kids that we just don't know who they belong to because it's cartels so threw them at the border. And the notion that they came over with their families, that's just simply
Let me ask you this, because this is sort of unique to America. Most other countries, like, good luck trying to get in, right? I mean, they've got actually really strict border policies, and you can't just show up and expect that you can somehow get, you know,
we
entry
are literally
in.
The only country on the planet Earth today where the candidate for the office of running the country wants open borders. The only one. We're the only country that sticks to permanent immigration system based on a system that Democrats came up with in the 1960s, as opposed to something like Canada and Australia does, which is, look, mm-hmm. when we bring people into the country that we are going to help the country. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, you should create an easier process for people that you want here and create incentives for those people to be here and, you know, actually have some kind of strategy, I suppose. You know, Angela Merkel, was pretty, shall we say, accepting, right, of so many immigrants coming into Germany. That didn't work out so well now, did it?
There's not one European country today after experiencing the flood of illegal immigration and refugees they had coming out of the Middle East and Syria several years ago that wants to go back to that. And now they're looking back. When you look at the problem that we're having with COVID, they go back and they shudder. The notion about unrestricted immigration in the time of COVID, that's a death sentence for a country. And it's completely irresponsible to talk about saying we're going to be an immigration nation by adapting all the policies, which are not only not good immigration policies, they're the ones that would destroy your country. That doesn't make much sense.
Well, I think there's unfortunately a method to their madness, sadly. I mean, in that they see more and more people coming here. You extend the opportunity for these people to vote, and you in their view, hopefully continue sort of growing the base of the Democrat Party. What I think they're starting to learn, though, and it's fascinating to me how many Hispanics are rejecting, right, Joe Biden in much bigger ways than I think anyone in the Democrat Party ever anticipated. And it's because people who are here now, and they are here legally now, and they have thus the right to vote, they're looking around saying, wait a second, but I want law and order. And by the way, I want a chance at the American dream. And by the way, I believe in the American dream. It's the entire reason I came here in the first place. Right, James?
So if you go to somebody today, and we'll take COVID off the table, but just go to somebody today who says, secure border, beating up the cartels, less than 3% unemployment. You show me that's not somebody that's not going to raise their hand and say, yeah, me too.
James from Heritage, you can follow him at JJ Carafano on Twitter. It is really good to see you. Thank you so much for joining us in studio today. Okay, don't go anywhere. I am Trish Regan, host of Trish Intel. I'm going to be right back.
FDNY firefighter Stephen Silver gave his life while saving others on 9/11, and the Tunnel to Towers Foundation has been supporting America's frontline heroes ever since. When a first responder or military service member doesn't come home and young children are left behind, Tunnel to Towers pays off their mortgage to lift the financial burden and bring their family stability. For catastrophically injured veterans, Tunnel to Towers builds mortgage-free smart homes, enabling our most severely injured heroes to live more independent lives. I'm asking you to support this cause that's committed to honoring our nation's heroes and ensuring people never forget 9/11. Help Tunnel to Towers to do good. Donate $11 a month at tunnel2towers.org. That's tunnel2towers.org. Thank you. I'm Sebastian Gorka. This is America First. Let's get back to the show with Trish Regan.
Thank you, Seb. It's good to be here with all of you today. You know, last night's final presidential debate, it's in the history books, and the impact of the November 3rd election, well, it's still anybody's guess. But there's absolutely no debate that in America we are in a fight right now for our fundamental freedoms. Right now, churches are being told when and how they can meet. Public schools and athletic associations are allowing boys to compete in girls' sports competitions. Just a few of the reasons why I'm so grateful for our friends at Alliance Defending Freedom. They are fighting pivotal court battles for people like you whose freedoms are threatened, and they do it for free. But ADF's Matt Sharp explains their important work really does depend on you.
And it's only through donations, both large and small, from listeners like you, grandmothers giving us $5, $10, $15, and others that are able to contribute more. Every one of those dollars goes to helping us take on new cases, to stand with our clients, to advocate for our First Amendment freedoms. All of this goes to enable us to do what we do free of charge to our clients as we're fighting for the freedoms of every American.
Indeed. So that was Matt Sharp. But we're heading into the weekend, so before you forget, please go to sebgorka.com and click on the ADF banner. Do donate your best gift, whether it's $100, $1,000, even more. It is that important. One time more. Go to sebgorka.com now to make your donation, or do it by calling 877-412-5888. That's 877-412-5888. I don't know if you guys caught this, but the president shared a little something on his Facebook page just yesterday. You see, he did this big sit-down interview with 60 Minutes. And, well, it turns out the reporter was a little bit argumentative in a way that the president didn't love. And they did an interview for like 35 minutes. 35 minutes in, somebody interrupts and says, okay, you know, five more minutes, and then we have the vice president. And he said, you know, I think we're kind of done here. I think we're done here. And he got up and left. And then the reports were the president storms out of the interview, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, one of the challenges that I suppose he has with doing an interview like that for 35 minutes is, you know, they're going to edit it. They're going to edit it down, because this is what old fashioned media programs do. They edit it down to like 6 or 7 minutes. And he just wanted America to see the whole thing. Here's a little excerpt.
This is the first warning. I think we have 5 minutes until we have the vice president step in. Is that about right?
Well, I think we have enough. Really, we have enough of that.
I think we're ready for the vice president now.
I think we have enough of an interview here. Okay, that's enough. Let's go. Let's go. Let's go meet for 2 seconds, okay? Thanks. I'll see you later.
So that was him walking out. Anyway, I'm going to let you in on a little insight. I remember about 2 years ago, I've interviewed the president numerous times, but this particular one 2 years ago was at the White House. And it happened on a Tuesday, maybe a Wednesday. It was midweek. And Leslie Stahl actually had done an interview on Sunday on 60 Minutes, just a couple days before mine. And it seemed very combative, if you would. And one of the things the president told me after the fact was it actually wasn't that combative in person. But it got edited such that it seemed combative. Because, you know, that's what they can do. Even if she's sitting there nodding and there's a lot of time that goes through, they can edit it in such a way where she's jumping back in. And the 40 minutes he gave them for the interview turned out to be, you know, roughly, what, 7? It was sort of their block. Maybe they did 2 blocks if he was lucky, but it was edited down significantly. And one of the things that he was struck by was how much news we made in my interview. The news in the 60 Minutes interview was, oh, wasn't it, you know, so contentious, da, da, da. We actually made news, all kinds of headlines. I mean, he actually went after Jerome Powell pretty aggressively in the interview, and we talked about that. I was hard on him. I pushed him on some of the comments he had made overseas about U.S. intelligence ops, and we made news, many, many more headlines. And the other thing that we did, and he was surprised by this, he said, you know, Trish, that's interesting. You ran the entire thing. And I said, well, yeah, I mean, it's not every day you get the president of the United States. And I am in a medium where we need content, right? And so we want to fill the airwaves with content. And when you got really good content, why wouldn't you? Why would I edit it down in a phony, sometimes fictitious way? I want authenticity. And if the president gives me 40 minutes, I'm going to use all 40 minutes. And you're going to see it as live, right? I mean, because that is the medium in which we now live. This radio show right now. None of it's scripted. I'm talking to you for hours on end here. I don't know how Seb does it. He does it every single day. But this is where we are in the media cycle. And we're not so canned. And you don't need to script everything. And you don't need to edit everything. So I kind of like that he put this out there. Oh, I'm sure that they're just dying right now at CBS News. I'm sure this is not at all welcomed. Because you know what? Why bother tuning in on Sunday night? You can already go and see it. The whole darn thing. On the president's Facebook page. Anyway, I am Trish Regan. I am host of Trish Intel, the brand new podcast. Make sure you go and download it. You can sign up for my emails at trishintel.com. I'm in for Dr. G. Don't go anywhere. We're back right after this.
This is Second Amendment Friday on America First, brought to you by GunBroker.com.
Welcome back, dear friends. GunBroker.com is the world's largest digital marketplace to buy and sell firearms, ammunition, accessories, and basically everything you need if you're into that kind of stuff. The gun selection is unmatched with over 1 million daily listings. At GunBroker.com, you are certain to find the gun of your dreams. I have more than once. And especially now with the crazy COVID times, if you're looking for ammunition, you have to start at GunBroker.com. This week's special guest is John Patton, a good friend of the show. You can find him on Twitter at Gun Collective. But more importantly, he has one of the very best gun YouTube sites out there. Just look for Gun Collective. John, welcome back to America First.
Hey, man, I'm pumped to be back on. It's always good to hear your voice and chat about some freedom, you know. Who couldn't love that?
We always love to talk freedom. We've got to get Genevieve on sometime, your beautiful muse. How about that?
Yeah, she's sitting right next to me. We're on our way to dog training right now. And, yeah, we're definitely going to make that happen.
Dog training? What kind of dog?
We've got a 1.5-year-old German Shepherd.
Very nice. It was my birthday yesterday, and I got a little Belgian Shepherd, a little 10-week-old Belgian Terhoeven.
Oh, so, that's adorable. You have to send me pictures.
Oh, it's all over my Instagram. Check it out. We went walking yesterday morning, took a little video with her older brother, Killian, and Leia was having a lot of fun. All right, buddy, let's talk about the thing that you are so good at talking about, which is guns. We're going to talk about the incredible impact of politics, the election, and the Chinese virus on the market. But first, a little bit of a victory. So I'm going to bring in some people who are involved in the manufacturing of these items. But there's this product. It's a kind of National Firearms Act. What did somebody call it? Nut kicker. I like that phrase. You're not allowed to have rifles under a certain barrel length of 16 inches. You can have pistols, but they can't have a stock. And some genius, who an individual I've talked to, came up with a brace, a device that would help our veterans who've lost some of their strength in their arms from wounding, from serving abroad and getting wounded, a brace which allows them to fire something like an AR pistol with a quasi-stock, but it's not a stock. And these things have sold in their millions. I've got many myself, these braced pistols. And then the Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms Agency said, nope. These are illegal, and they wrote letters to key manufacturers. But, John, my understanding is they didn't go up against the big boys like Springfield or like Smith & Wesson. They tried to intimidate the little companies despite the president, despite the DOJ saying, no, cease and desist. What's the latest development? I hear in the grapevine that something good has happened. You're the man at the Gun Collective. What's the latest, John?
So what happened at the beginning of the month is that ATF sent another letter to Q, the company out of New Hampshire that was the kind of key player here, and they said, we are going to suspend our cease and desist that was originally the problem. We're going to suspend that for 60 days, which is interesting because it pushes it until after the election.
Right.
So yeah, it's a positive thing, sure.
but it's just a kind of playing out the clock, because let me explain how it was explained to me by one person who's inside all of this. There's the ATF, the policy side, and then there's the criminal side. If you start manufacturing machine guns without a license, there the guys are going to come after you and put you in jail. The policy side was told by the White House, by DOJ, hey, there's no crime here. This is permitted. Stop harassing these companies. And the criminal division, which is clearly run by holdovers, people left over from the Obama administration, said, well, we don't care what the president says. He's only the president. We don't care what Attorney General Barr said. And they're the ones who went forward. And, John, it's that division that has been told, hey, you've got to stop. And they've said, okay, 60 days, which means they're hedging their bets on the election, correct?
Yeah, that's exactly what I think they're doing. And I know for a fact that there are Obama-era appointees kind of heading this charge and trying to make millions of gun owners in America felon. They're trying to put people in jail. And yeah, it's unacceptable. And I think it's great that we shine a spotlight on their wrongdoings.
Yeah. And for the record, guys, Q in New Hampshire has nothing to do with that cult of morons called QAnon. They make the honey badger, which is a delightful weapon. I have one myself. We are talking to John Patton. He is the mastermind behind. Well, no, I think Genevieve's the mastermind. He's the face behind the Gun Collective. Follow him on Twitter. Subscribe right now to his superb YouTube channel. That starts by saying it's the only GunTube channel, the YouTube gun channel, that actually tells you the things you're interested to know. Is it something like that?
Yeah, it's the only gun news show that covers things you actually care about.
Bingo. I paraphrased you. The last minute and a half we have with you, John, every show, every program, you start with the stunning sales figures. We are just 11 days away from the election. Tell us what you're seeing in the gun industry in the United States.
The gun industry is jammed with orders. Every single gun company is behind, not by weeks, but by months. On orders, and every gun shop in America is selling out of everything they get in. At every level, distributor and dealer, no matter where they're at, everybody is selling out of everything, both firearms and ammunition. It is unprecedented. I think we, in September, we hit the total amount of background checks that we had for the entire last year in 2019. We hit that in September with three more months to go. And every single month this year has been about several hundred thousand more than the year prior. It is absolutely mind-boggling.
And the thing that you do so well is that you compare, you make it tangible, these millions of background checks, these millions of sales. You say, yeah, last month Americans bought enough guns to arm Lithuania. In the summer we bought enough guns to arm everybody in Hungary, from children to grandparents. These are the figures. But here's the message, and I'm sure John agrees. Don't get serious about the Second Amendment. Don't get serious about your civil rights just because an election is coming and you're afraid. Always, always exercise your civil rights. And the Second Amendment is a civil right. It's the one that makes all the others possible. I'm Sebastian Gorka, member of the President's National Security Education Board. You've been listening to John Patton. Follow him right now at the Gun Collective YouTube channel and on Twitter at Gun Collective. Good doggy training for you, John and Genevieve. I'm Sebastian Gorka. This is America First. Let's get back to the show with Trish Regan.
It's so good to be here. The day after the debate, a tremendous performance there from the President of the United States. I thought he did okay last time. I wasn't as hard on him as some people. And I also cut him a little bit of slack because, after all, it's not every day that you have to go up against both Joe Biden and Chris Wallace, right? Anyway, it was a good, solid performance from him last night. And he's up against this, you know, career politician. And this is what Americans, we don't like, right? We're tired of the career politicians. We don't need any more of those. We really don't, because it really causes us to question their alliances. I mean, you can't help. It's kind of more settling, if you ask me. And by the way, I think the intention of our founding fathers was really to see people that had been successful in other spheres, right? In other sectors outside of politics. The idea was you'd give back to society after you had made your money somewhere else, rather than, you know, having an entire career in politics and then, you know what, trying to be on the take after. I mean, that's what Obama did, right? And that's what the Clintons did. And Clinton Global Initiative, I think, was in some ways part of that. Anyway, the question is, was Joe Biden doing something like that? You know, here's, I want to get into this. This is, to me anyway, the real smoking gun, an unbelievable text that was discovered or uncovered, I should say, by the New York Post, also Rudy Giuliani, thanks to this laptop, right, found in this computer hardware store repair shop in Delaware. And it's believed that this laptop belonged to Hunter Biden, in fact, was his. Anyway, you had a couple of emails on there that were a little sketchy. One that insinuated basically that he, Hunter, had arranged a meeting with his boss at Burisma, number three executive at Burisma, the company paying him, like, you know, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars for a board job, which is a lot for a board job. And by the way, especially for a job where you don't know anything about the industry. So they're paying him hundreds of thousands of dollars for this deal. There's one email that talks about the importance of using his influence. And then there's another email from the same guy saying, hey, you know, thanks for the meeting with your dad. His dad was then the vice president in charge of Ukraine policy. And then we know, of course, the follow-up, which is that his father got rid of the prosecutor that was investigating the company, Burisma. So that's one part of it. And then there's that other email chain, right, where there's a series of people that are talking about a compensation package related to a Chinese energy company deal that they were intending to do. That's super suspicious. And yet nobody's really asking about any of this stuff. I mean, my sources have said to me, they said this days ago, the laptop is real, the emails are real. And now we have the former business partner, whom the FBI is talking to today, and the Senate wants to talk to as well, the former business partner of none other than Hunter Biden, saying, yeah, these emails are real. Well, there is a text message here that I think is especially incriminating. Do not go anywhere, because I want to share this with you, and I want you to hear just exactly what it's alleged Hunter Biden was saying to his daughter.
If you thought 2016 was important, 2020 is going to be the greatest, most significant election of your lifetime. As a result, we've created a unique additional podcast with our regular guest in studio, former special assistant to President Trump, Boris Epstein. It's called The Battle for 1600. Join us today by subscribing to the podcast for free. Just look for my name, Boris Epstein, and The Battle for 1600.